Hi, everybody. My name is Sandy. I'm an alcoholic.
Sandy.
I'm Karen. I'm an alcoholic.
Karen.
Welcome, everybody. Beth got stuck in the city today. They went in to see the marathon, and she thought she would get out a little quicker, and she didn't. So Sandy said she'd step up and help out. And kind of part of what Beth and I, besides the whole lean in concept that we've been trying to bring to you, the other part is that we're sponsor and sponsee. And how that relationship works. So we're sponsor and sponsee, so we're just kind of continuing with that. Tonight we're going to do step 10, step 11, see if we can get through those. So kind of bringing us up to step 10, we have we've done 1, 2, and 3, which really simplified is I can't, he can, I think I'll let him. 4 and 5, doing our inventory, cleaning house, taking a look at our part in things, what character defects come out, which leads into making a list of our character defects, and watching what God will do with those when we give them to Him. And then we have a list of people that we've harmed. We talked about that last week and how we go about making our amends and setting matters right. And then that leads us right into 10, which is, you know, besides the whole leaning in, I think the more, it's like anything else for me in this program, the more I do it, the more it becomes effective. It's almost like a muscle. The more I work it, the stronger it gets. The more I lean in, the more I'm apt to do it, and the stronger this God of mine gets in my life, the more that he kind of takes over. But, you know, no accident that I'm here, especially doing, you know, like a nightly inventory or looking at my day. Anybody that went to the diner today knows that we had a line out the door for 8 hours. So my character defects by the end of my shift were not very pretty, the ones that you were seeing. In fact, I walked in the door after work at like 4:30, and what came out of my mouth was, God, nobody appreciates me at work. Now, what I did was showed up and did my job, but it was kind of like when I first got sober, I wanted an award for that, you know, like, come on, look at me, doing the right thing on a daily basis. Sometimes I get very self-absorbed and wonder why everybody's not stopping and telling me what a great job I'm doing, things that other people have been doing their whole life. So I think these steps tonight really kind of help us take a look at that and bring it into perspective. So we are on page 84 in the big book.
Do you want to start?
Sure. Go right ahead, Sandy. You can take us off here.
Okay, so middle of the page. This thought brings us to step 10, which suggests we continue to take personal inventory and continue to set right any new mistakes as we go along. We vigorously commence this way of living as we cleaned up the past. We have entered the world of the Spirit. Our next function is to grow in understanding and effectiveness. This is not an overnight matter. It should continue for a lifetime. Continue to watch for selfishness, dishonesty, resentment, and fear. When these crop up, we ask God at once to remove them. We discuss them with someone immediately and make amends quickly if we have harmed anyone. Then we resolutely turn our thoughts to someone we can help. Love and tolerance is our code. This is huge for me. Once I did all the work and once I took had the self-awareness of that inventory, it was so much work. To just stop there would have been such a disappointment. To continue to grow in this program, for me, is a daily basis. And my defaults are to be self-centered. I am extremely self-centered. As a matter of fact, in the promises when they say self-seeking will slowly disappear, that is a tough one. And I think it's all about me. It's hard. It's hard to, you know, I remember having conversations with people and think, well, when are they going to start talking about me? When is this going to, you know, be my turn? And that was normal for me then. And it wasn't until I came in this program that I realized how self-centered I was and how this affected my thinking. So on a daily basis, to look at each of those, where was I selfish, dishonest, resentful, and fear? Because if I don't, it's going to build up, because it just is going to, each day it's going to get a little worse, and the resentments are going to get a little bigger, and then they're going to turn into, you know, anger, and it's just at the end of the night, I kind of just look back and say, what could I have done better? Where could I have been? Where was God today? And where wasn't God today? And you know, there's plenty of times where I don't want to do that. There's plenty of times where I just want to get in bed and go to sleep and put on Netflix. And, you know, I do after I do this. And usually those are the nights, that's where I sit down and I really write out that I really needed to write out my inventory. And it's also being grateful. I also have a section on there at the end that is my gratitude for the day and what I'm grateful for, what I don't have. And I'm grateful for all the little miracles that seem to happen in the day, and to list those. And also then to turn it to someone else other than myself. What's going on with my friends around me, my network, people who I care about? How are they doing? And to pray for them. I didn't do that before. I did it on my terms. It wasn't anything like it is now. And to do that, you know, each night takes a discipline. And like Karen said, it gets better. It gets easier. And eventually it's not always easy. I mean, I want things to be easy. I'm an alcoholic. I want it to feel good. And, I want it to be easy. But the things that come easy they usually aren't as sweet. And the rewards usually aren't as good. Not that I have to be rewarded all the time, but...
But we like rewards. Look at me.
Yeah.
And it's great to stop in a moment. I don't know if I want to say great. It's freeing. Instead of sitting with stuff all day, all week, all month, it used to be years I could hold on to stuff. And, you know, once you've cleaned out, you know, to me it's almost like, you know, I was this vessel and I was just full of all this junk. I just carried around so much stuff. And in the preceding steps, it like cleared all that out. So it was easier for me to see the stuff that would come up in a moment, whether it be a flash of anger or a sarcastic comment or criticism, dishonesty, whatever it would be. I started to recognize these things because I wasn't living in all that wreckage of my past anymore. I cleaned that up. So when it would come up at the moment, just to stop. First of all, one of the hardest things for me to do is to look at somebody and say, I don't know. I don't know why that's so difficult, but to admit I don't know. Or I was wrong, just as simply as that, and say I'm sorry, and to walk away. Or to stand there for a moment. I guess I don't have to walk away. And just own what my behavior has done for a minute, because it's so much easier to do that. I mean, one incident, there's only so much that can happen in this 12-hour, 14-hour window of the day compared to when I tried to clean up 50 years of my life. And doing that on a daily basis, it's kind of like, you know, sweeping the sidewalk compared to, or maybe you say, you know, running the vacuum cleaner compared to spring cleaning when, I don't do this, but I'll give it as an analogy. People clean their walls and they take down their curtains and they wash. I mean, they do this major heavy duty, which is to me what all the step work was like. And now I just have to do this light little cleaning to keep stuff nice. And that's such a bad example because I don't even do my own cleaning. I have a cleaning lady. So let's just be honest here. It's so nice to see my cleaning lady come in and, you know. But I think you know the analogy that I'm getting at. And it says in that paragraph that Sandy just read, when these crop up, we ask God to remove them at once. Because I forget that God can continually do for me what I can't do for myself. So I thought I was always going to be this... quick-tempered, I used to think I intimidated people by the way that I acted, and I took pride in that. Really what I did was I manipulated them and backed them into a corner. But that one sentence, when these crop up, we ask God to remove them. The way that Beth had me practice that was just when I did something that I wasn't comfortable with. I bitched at a coworker today. And she said, just stop and say, God, I know you do not want me to be mean. Please show me how you would like me to be. And I couldn't even remember that simple prayer or going to God. I put it on a note card. I carried it around with me for the longest time because you can do with anything. I know you don't want me to be judgmental. Please show me how you want me to be. I know you don't want me to be intolerant. Please show me how you want me to be. And he just keeps correcting these things and moving me in the right direction. So it's a really powerful little sentence. And that's where you get to love and tolerance of others is our code. And it doesn't just say people in the rooms. It doesn't just say family. It doesn't just say significant other.
Everybody. It's the girl at the CVS counter that's not treating me right. She's not waiting on me right. It's everybody.
CVS and does that to you too? Oh, man.
Yep, I'm not taking it personally. But you know, the honesty part too. I never realized that, you know, for me, avoidance is huge. I'm a big avoider, especially of financial things. Like, I'll pay it right when it's due. And I don't know. It's like the money's there. I have a block. So I pray, God, please remove this and so I can be better of service to myself. But that dishonesty, what I'll do is I won't look at my bank statement. It's almost like I'll just make it a mystery, and I'll live on that edge, and I'll manipulate it a little, because I don't know what thrill I'm getting here. But that's being dishonest. And somebody pointed that out to me, that, you know, not looking at your bank statements is a huge one, and you're not being honest. And I was like, damn, I got to put that on my inventory. And then it's there, and if it's there, and I do exchange my inventory with a sponsee sister, which every night. So that helps a checks and balances for me. And if it shows up, Karen said, if it's showing up more than three times, you know, it's something that you need to look at. And I had to put it on there more than three times in a row. And yeah, I've got an issue there. And so finances is something I need to work with. So what do? I ask God for the willingness. And just ask for the willingness, and somehow it gets a little bit easier. It gets a little bit, it happens. It works. But I have to have that, or I will go back to my old defaults easily.
I don't think that when I showed back up after having, you know, two periods of recovery or of abstinence mixed with the recovery and then relapses. I was really fearful because I, you know, wanted to, I believe this program didn't work for me because I said I'm working it and I still picked up, and it was after years of being clean. And when I got to really getting honest, I should say when God brought me to being really honest with myself and taking a look at it, I think 10 and 11 is where I really dropped the ball. I came in, I did what my sponsor said, I did the work, I did those steps, but I stopped. I don't know what it is. I think that for me, 9 was an awesome, making those amends was a really freeing experience. Mm-hmm. I really loved it, and it was a lot of energy, physically, emotionally, spiritually. But I don't, like, ever remember doing 10, 11. I jumped to 12. I know that I was trying to help other people. But I don't remember cleaning up as I went along, making things right. And I know I wasn't doing a nightly inventory. And what ended up happening is that it wasn't that I just woke up one day and said that I wanted to pick up. Is that vessel that I had cleaned out, I just started putting this crap back in. Little by little, day after day, and couldn't understand why all of a sudden I was drowning again, why I was so miserable. I can remember, I mean, kind of for me, what is like a warning is when I say that I want to F it, like just, you know, forget it. you know, just forget everything. And that, for me, is usually what is preceding picking up, because I'm in so much emotional and internal pain, and I don't understand why. And as an alcoholic, I go to what relieves that. And I didn't have this relationship with God, and I wasn't doing any kind of working on a daily basis kind of program. So for me, it was I turned to what the only thing I knew to relieve that. So these steps are just have been life-changing for me, unbelievably.
It is. It is. The step 10, too, it just keeps me humble.
Right-sized.
It keeps me right-sized, and 'cause I can get away from this program, and I can think that I can do everything on my own, or I can just, you know, like I said, fall back to those defects and those old ways of living. And this is right-sizing me. And it also, when I'm asking God to remove these defects and on a daily basis, and if I'm seeing something coming up, it's my relationship with my higher power that's cultivating, and it's getting stronger now. And I'm like, I've got this friend. I'm walking arm in arm with my higher power now, because I'm talking to him every day and he knows where I'm at. And that is the really, that's the miracle that I experience. As long as I'm checking in and I'm showing up, you know, they say God helps those who help themselves. And if I'm showing up and I'm trying, then I got a shot. I got a chance at some peace. And I've had so many little miracles that it's just awesome. But, I got to do the footwork.
Okay, so back to the book. The next sentence is a promise. And we have ceased fighting anything or anyone, even alcohol. So you notice how it starts changing. You know, when you're first getting sober, it's all about just not picking up a drink, not picking up a drink. Now it's we have ceased fighting anything or anyone. So go ahead if you want to read.
For by this time, sanity will have returned. We will seldom be interested in liquor. If tempted, we recoil from it like a hot flame. We react sanely and normally, and we will find that this has happened automatically. We will see that our new attitude toward liquor has been given us without any thought or effort on our part. It just comes. This is the miracle of it. We are not fighting it, neither are we avoiding temptation. We feel as though we have been placed in a position of neutrality, safe and protected. We have not even sworn off. Instead, the problem has been removed. It does not exist for us. We are neither cocky nor are we afraid. That is our experience. This is how we react so long as we keep spiritually fit. For me, that is a miracle. I love this. We feel as though we have been placed in a position of neutrality. I just couldn't believe that I didn't want to drink anymore. I couldn't believe that I didn't need it, that I felt okay in me, in my skin. And that was over time. It didn't come all at once. It was a process. And it's just, you know, it is, like it says, it just comes. And it's a miracle. But I remember putting on my socks one day and thinking, getting dressed for in the morning, and I was just about 5 or 6 months sober, and I thought, oh, my God, I haven't thought about having a drink. Wow. So at about 5 or 6 months, the obsession was lifted. And for me to think, like recoiling to take a drink, it's like, oh, God, no. Oof. We were at a friend's wedding, and they had the kind of non-alcoholic champagne. And I took a sip, and it was like, ooh, this just reminds me of too much. I just couldn't do it. I just could not. It just tasted too many memories. I can't go down that road. So, but It's God doing for us.
And we still have, you know, we have the alcoholic brain. So, like, if the thought of a drink just pops in your head from something bizarre, like, you know, Sandy's talking about drinking something that wasn't alcoholic but just has that memory, or if you're like me, I have drinking dreams. I am using dreams. I don't know why. I mean, I used to think there had to be something wrong, or maybe I wanted to use, or I don't know. I love to be dramatic about everything. But it tells me right here, we recoil from any thoughts that we have, and we react sanely and normally. So it's just, I make sure that I tell somebody, and I just move on. Because I'll tell you, the great thing about a dream is that when you wake up and you know that it wasn't real.
But it's also a really good, healthy reminder of what it was like.
Yeah.
Because I had one recently, and I woke up with that shame and remorse, and I was so upset.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, oh, and I was like, I'm not telling anybody. Like, going right to denial. And I wasn't going to tell anybody. I'm like, wait a minute, I didn't drink. Oh, man, I don't have my date anymore. My sober date's gone. But I did that. I shared it, and I shared it at a meeting. And, you know, it happens, and it just gives me that gratitude that I don't have to live like that anymore.
So, I mean, this is, you know, it says that is the miracle of it. You're just not in the fighting mode anymore. And when you live in it, when you're not living in the problem anymore, it sure frees up a lot of energy to do a lot of great stuff in your life. I mean, it used to be everything just about how do I not take a drink. And now, you know, that problem has been removed in my life. Here again, I thought that only happened for you guys, and it did happen in spite of me. It happened for me, too. But it ends this paragraph with a warning. It says, that is how we react as long as we keep in fit spiritual condition. So it's not like a freebie that's like a one-time stamp that if you do this, you know, 1 through 10, you are just, to be, for the rest of your life, you are, you are...
You are heathen, you're healed.
Yeah, yep. It talks about you have to stay in spiritual condition. And then it goes on and talks more about that, if you want to go ahead and keep reading.
Okie doke. It is easy to let up on the spiritual program of action and rest on our laurels. Just like I said, with just, oh, I'm just going to get into bed and I'm going to skip inventory tonight. We are headed for trouble if we do, for alcohol is a subtle foe. We are not cured of alcoholism. What we really have is a daily reprieve contingent on the maintenance of our spiritual condition. Every day is a day when we must carry the vision of God's will into all our activities. How can I best serve thee? Thy will, not mine, be done. These are thoughts which must go with us constantly. We can exercise our willpower along this line all we wish. It is the proper use of the will. Thy will be done.
And that's a great thing just to, as you go along your day, just to say, thy will, not mine, thy will, not mine, thy will, not mine. Just asking God in, you know, here again, just using those spiritual muscles just along the way.
Every day. Much has already been said about receiving strength, inspiration, and direction from Him who has all knowledge and power. If we have carefully followed directions, we have begun to sense the flow of His Spirit into us. To some extent, we have become God-conscious. We have begun to develop this vital sixth sense, but we must go further, and that means more action.
And that really does start happening in your life, it started happening in mine, where it used to be like, you know, I would spend a lot of effort trying to figure out what was my will and what was God's will. And I can remember asking, I can't figure out who's talking and who's saying what. And as I went through, you know, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, and 10, and then was cleaning up as I went along, what started happening is that this God consciousness, and what that was for me is that my unhealthy thinking became much clearer, I think, because I didn't have so much of it. Maybe I only have like a couple monkeys now instead of 10 in there talking at the same time. So my unhealthy thinking was a little easier to recognize, but it wasn't so separate. It wasn't like me and then God. It was like we were together now. It was kind of like one being. And when I would get, you know, Beth and I've talked a lot about the nudges, like God nudging you and letting you know which direction, like those became clearer. And that was God's will, like living in me. I think it always did. But for me, it was always these two separate entities. And this is like where my program, it kind of became one. I hope that makes sense. But it just became clear.
And those old habits, those things don't work anymore. And those old go-tos that I used to do, and the lying, the defects, they just don't feel good anymore. And I was talking to my sponsee about it today, and they just, you recognize them. And by looking at them daily, I become more aware of them. And that's my conscience, the God that, as Karen would say, you're getting closer to the person that God, you were intended to be, who you were meant to be. And, you know, always seeking. And it's a work in progress. But to be able to recognize those things now. Before it was just all a blur. And so...
Yeah, so step 11. And suggest through. Suggest prayer and meditation. So this is, you can tell, like I like look at my book. This is, I read along these parts a lot. But let's read, like, why don't you go ahead and read it first, and then we'll talk
Step
about
11
it.
Step 11 suggests prayer and meditation. We shouldn't be shy on this matter of prayer. Better men than we are using it constantly. It works. If we have the proper attitude and work at it, it would be easy to be vague about this matter. Yet we believe we can make some definite and valuable suggestions. When we retire at night, we constructively review our day. Do we owe an apology? Have we kept something to ourselves which could be discussed with another person at once? Were we kind and loving toward all? What could we have done better? Were we thinking of ourselves most of the time? Or were we what we could pack into the stream of life? But we must be careful not to drift into worry, remorse, or morbid reflection, for this would diminish our usefulness to others. After making our review, we ask God's forgiveness and inquire what corrective measures should be taken. So here we're asking, seeing where God was in our day and looking at it in our inventory.
Well, there's an outline. I don't know how anybody else does their nightly inventory, but this is how it was suggested for me to do it. And there was in the book. Clear. I just on a piece of paper, I have a notebook like this that I use all the time, and this is what it'll look like. I just put the date on top. And it does say constructively review our day. That means I'm not getting out of bat and saying, Karen, you're such an idiot. These are all the things you did wrong. This is so I can learn and be better. And there's my list. Do I owe an apology? So I put apology. But look, I skipped that part too. Was I resentful, selfish? Isn't that
the other list?
Dishonest, afraid. So resentful, selfish, dishonest, afraid. Do I owe an apology? Have I kept something to myself? Do I have a secret? Kind and loving towards all. And I mean, it just goes down. It gives me, what could have I done better? Was I thinking of myself all the time? Was I self-centered? And what did I pack into the stream of life? And so that'll be my list from a nightly inventory. I mean, we're talking a 5-minute process if I want to make an excuse of why I don't have the time to do it. And it's very interesting, the more I do it, the stuff that is revealed through it. Like dishonest, I think, well, I didn't tell any lies today. Well, how about the stuff that when I tell myself that I am worthless, or I don't deserve this, or I'm not good enough, is that dishonest? It is dishonest. How much have I packed into the stream of love? I used to love being busy just to be busy so I didn't have to look at me. So trying to practice some balance in that. There's just a list, and I just go through it. It's a great exercise to exchange it with someone. Like Sandy was talking about, the first time I did it, Becca and I had done it as a suggestion from my sponsor, and it was just showing them to each other. And it was interesting just to be honest with my nightly inventory when I knew somebody else was looking at it. Because if you're like me, then it has to be the best nightly inventory. And you have to say the best things. Well, what is honest about that? That's all about pride and ego. And so learning just from that, how am I when I'm letting someone else see? Because the truth is the truth, whether somebody I'm letting somebody look at it or not. So why does it change when I think somebody's looking at it? So it's a really interesting process to go through.
I'm grateful for that I'm exchanging it, because it helps me look at things where I can somehow I can choose not to look at it, and you know I can see what I want to see sometimes, but it is. It is helpful. And also with the packing in the stream of life, not that I sit on my laurel, not that I sit and I'm, sloth-like, but, was I effective today? Was I participating? Because a big thing for me was isolation. Was I reaching out? Did I reach out to my network? What could I have done better? Call another alcoholic. Call two alcoholics. I could have eaten better. You know, all these things that go into how I feel and on a daily basis. So if something is off, hopefully I can nip it in the bud and get on top of it before it becomes huge.
And it says there, but we must be careful not to drift into worry, remorse, or morbid reflection, for that would diminish our usefulness to others. Because, self-pity is and low self-worth were on my character defects. So, I can do my nightly inventory and look at all these things that I did wrong and say, oh my gosh, I really am a piece of crap. But that's not what the program is asking me to do at this point. It's asking me to reflect on that, to ask, where do I need help? What can I do better? So again, it's balance, practicing that balance. And then I have my list, and then I literally do a line, and I write prayer and meditation. So that's after I have written out my day where, these things, the list that paragraph has given me. Then I just pray for, a couple minutes. What do you want me to learn from this? What could have I done better? What are you trying to teach me? Because I believe it's all lessons. And it's not a failure if I learn something from it. And if I just sit with that for a minute, the answers come. I was just looking at my journal before I came up. Before I came in today, and things that I would be so mad about, and this is just like last week, is hilarious, because I don't even remember them if I didn't see them on paper, but in that moment, they were like huge. Yeah. Now, if I would have fed it, it would have gotten bigger and bigger and bigger, but it's like the stuff that it's just so trivial, but how it can be so huge in the moment. So then sitting with that and then the answers come, like it's either, ask me in more, pray more, reach out more, whatever, as long as I'm asking, the answers will come. So I do that, and then I just write a couple things that I'm grateful for. It's just a really nice spin for me to end my day kind of in a gratitude. We also do a group gratitude list that at the end of every day we write the one thing we're most grateful for. So that's going, putting it back on the positive thing. And if I do that on a daily basis, I don't get all jammed up. If something comes up 3 days in a row, and believe me, I can stay mad at somebody for 3 days in a row. My sponsor says I have to bring it to her, which I do. Sometimes we have to do a little mini fourth and fifth, whatever is needed to be done. But if something is sticking with me after 3 days and I'm putting it on my inventory, I'm asking God what I need to do with it, and I'm staying stuck in it, then I need to take a look at that. And believe me, there's always stuff I need to take a look at.
The meditation part, I don't do it as much as you. I don't do it at night as much. I do it in the morning. I found my morning is, I raise puppies for the seeing eye, and I get to sit out on my deck while they play, and I bring out, and at 6 o'clock in the morning, it's dark out. Well, it used to be. Now it'll be light. But that's like my peaceful time, and I bring out my books, that I have two books that I read from, and my prayers, and that's where I kind of just get centered and get my head screwed on. And I do my meditation more in the morning. It works better. But at night, I also put down the gratitude, and I also put down the praying for those that I'm concerned about. I use the app, the Spiritual Toolkit app. I was using the writing it down. I have a bunch of nice little journals from writing it down on the old-fashioned way, but I'm using the Spiritual Toolkit, which works out good. If anybody can just download it, it's real easy. Even I can do it.
Okay, so that's a great segue into talking about the morning and the meditation and all of that. Here again, it gives us very clear-cut directions. We're on page 86. Sandy's going to start, on the second paragraph?
This page 86, and this, Karen asked me when I got to this part in my recovery. She said, read this every morning. And I did for a year. I made a copy of it and put it with my two books that I read, my 24-hour book and Jesus Calling. And I read it every morning. And it was, you know what? This process is like retraining my brain. Mm-hmm. I needed this. I needed my brain to be retrained. This does not come naturally. So by reading it every day became my code. And it gets in here somehow after repetitive training. So I have a special fondness for pages 86 to 88. okay, on awakening, let us think about the 24 hours ahead. So we consider our plans for the day. Before we begin, we ask God to direct our thinking, especially that we be divorced from self-pity, dishonest, or self-seeking motives. Under these conditions, we can employ our mental faculties with assurance, for after all, God gave us brains to use. Our thought life will be placed on a much higher plane when our thinking is cleared of wrong motives. Yeah, motives. Checking our motives. Mm-hmm. It's huge. In thinking about our day, we are faced indecision. We may not be able to determine which course to take. Here we ask God for inspiration, an intuitive thought or a decision. We relax and take it easy. So that's that sitting with it for a moment, sitting with it for a minute, like Karen was talking about. We don't struggle. We are often surprised how the right answers come after we have tried this for a while. What used to be a hunch or an occasional inspiration gradually becomes a working part of the mind. That's that spiritual progress, that God conscience for me. That's right there. Being still and experienced and having just made conscious contact with God, it is not probable that we are going to be inspired at all times. We might pay for this presumption in all sorts of absurd actions and ideas. And nevertheless, we find that our thinking will, as time passes, be more and more on the plane of inspiration we come to rely upon. So our thinking kind of evens out.
Mm-hmm.
Do you want
to... I want to read the whole thing first.
Okay.
So go ahead.
We usually conclude the period of meditation with a prayer that we have been shown all through the day what our next step is to be, that we be given whatever we need to take care of such problems. We ask especially for freedom from self-will and careful not to make requests for ourselves only. We may ask for ourselves, however, if others will be helped. We are careful never to pray for our own selfish ends, maybe. Many of us have wasted a lot of time doing that, and it doesn't work. You can easily see why. If circumstances warrant, we ask our wives and our friends to join us in morning meditation. If we belong to a religious denomination, which requires a definite morning devotion, we attend to that also. If not members of religious bodies, we sometimes select and memorize a few set prayers which emphasize the principles we have been discussing. There are many helpful books also. Suggestions about these may be obtained from one's priest, minister, or rabbi. Be quick to see where religious people are right. Make use of what they have to offer. As we go through the day, we pause when agitated or doubtful and ask for the right thought or action. We constantly remind ourselves we are no longer running the show, humbly saying to ourselves many times each day, "Thy will be done." We are then in much less danger of excitement, fear, anger, worry, self-pity, or foolish decisions. We become much more efficient. We do not tire so easily. We are not burning up energy foolishly as we did when we were trying to arrange life to suit ourselves. It works. It really does. We alcoholics are undisciplined, so we let God discipline us in the simple way we have just outlined. But this is not all. There is action and more action. Faith without works is dead. The next chapter is devoted to step 12.
I love that part about mornings, and I guess I like it all read in one thing because in my mind I hear that, because I also was suggested that I read that every morning for well over a year, and I still like to go back to it from time to time and just do it for a couple months, and just to start my day with that, talk about getting right-sized. If really just simply, because sometimes depending on if I've had my coffee or not in the morning, my brain does not work as well as I'd like it to. It's just reminding me that the day is not about me. It just gets me out of me. So it kind of just it's just like that gentle little switch of me or not me. But it says just so many great things in here. You know, the stuff that we have worked on in that first 1 through 10 now, it's all in there, you know, asking that our thoughts be right, talking about our motives, and it's saying, you know, this is where it's not like you're asked to get sober and then be dumb. I mean, you have brains. It's like use them. And the more you're in tune with this oneness, with whatever your higher power is, for me, you know, with more I'm in tune with God, the more our thinking becomes in line. So as my brain, the thoughts that I'm having, they're not just the, you know, the what used to be just all that insanity, because the more I'm practicing healthy thoughts, the more healthy thoughts are coming. And the delusional thinking that I used to have just doesn't, like you were talking about, it just starts not making sense. Stuff that I used to believe, it's just not fitting anymore. It's this whole new way of living that, you know, my actions are changing, my thoughts are changing, and my beliefs have changed.
There's so much changing going on. There's just, you know, you're evolving every day, I'm just so grateful that those things that used to fit, they don't fit anymore, and I can feel that they don't fit by taking a look at them every day, and these nice reminders, pausing when agitated and doubtful.
Pause. Love the pause.
I need to be reminded of that. I need to, you know, pause. And I actually wrote a little prayer early in sobriety, and I took pieces of this. I didn't even know, but they were just like little pieces of, you know, the pause when agitated and doubtful. And this will save me from remorse and what was the other one? Remorse and worry and dishonesty and self-seeking motives. And asking God to direct my thinking, especially that it be divorced from self-pity and dishonesty and self-seeking motives. And I need those reminders. I need that. I need to read it every day because that's where I go when I don't have anything else.
And that I won't be inspired at all times. You know, I mean, back in the book, it talks about the froth, of the, you know, kind of that pink cloud. There's different terminology for it. And I'm one of those. I mean, especially used to be a lot more that if I wasn't like extremely enthusiastic or all revved up in something, that it had of no value. You know, it's kind of like the drama of it. But you know, it's life on life's terms and finding some balance in that, which really is like finding some serenity. It's like it's not like I wake up every morning and I'm like, yay, you know, and I'm doing cartwheels and I'm so excited. Some days I'm pretty enthusiastic about the day getting going. And believe me, there's other mornings, another day.
But I have this to start my day. And the other morning I'm at the gym and I'm on the treadmill. And if it weren't for this program, I don't think I would have ever have noticed it because I would have had a much different view. But it's because of this, I think, that, you know, I can start each morning and I have a shot at some serenity. And I'm on the treadmill and I am just noticing, like Karen and Beth would talk about, these are God shots and nudges. And I'm, you know, it's a day at the gym. So, but I'm just looking at it differently. And there's a woman working out on the rower machine in front of me. And a gentleman comes in with a suit on. He must work there. And he leaned down and he greeted her and he said hello. And he gave her a kiss and she just, you know, he went about his way. And she's rowing on this rower, and the look that came over her face of such joy, and she was at such peace, and I could see that. And if it weren't for, and I said to myself, oh my God, if it weren't for the fact that I asked God to show me what I need to see today, take me where you want me to go, and I wasn't open to this. It kind of, all of this kind of opens me up to have these experiences. And when I, before I did this work, I was so filled with all these things that burdened me down and all the negativity. And I probably would have looked at that woman and had an opinion like, oh, she probably doesn't work for a living and she's not working as hard as I do. And, you know, she just doesn't have it as hard as I do. And it wouldn't have been beautiful. And then out of the office, it continued. And that moment, out of the office, one of the trainers came out with a suit on and it looked like he was going for an interview or something. And I watched the camaraderie with the other trainers, giving them a high five and telling them, go get, you know, good for you. And I got to see this, and I got to feel the love in the room. And that's, you know, that's what I'm doing this for. I want to get all the goodies. I want to clear out this stuff, and I want to feel that, you know, this is amazing. And if I, you know, didn't do all that work, I don't think I would have been able to have been open to it. And this program gives me that opportunity.
I think that's a great example of, like, how free do you want to be? You know, it's not a 9-step program. You know, there are 12 steps. And if you keep on going, I mean, great time to you've been leaning in and leaning. Just keep on leaning. And there is no limit to that and. You know, how amazing do you want your life to be? And this is really where that stuff kind of, you know, because it's not about the drinking anymore. No. If you're doing the work, it's not about the drinking anymore because that's been removed. And, you know, there's a paragraph that talks about religions and spiritual people in our life. And I used to be very threatened if you didn't believe what I believed. Which tells you I had no security about what I believed. I didn't understand that at the time. But if you had a different belief system than me, then I would have to convince you that mine was right. So I felt okay about mine. Now, it's like, tell me, how did you find, you know, your belief? Or how did you find, I mean, you can talk to people about that. You can get strength. There is so much wisdom and abundance out there from so many different avenues. It is unbelievable. And if you come in with a religious belief or religious training or rituals or daily prayers, this is where you can incorporate. It's not like, you know, you have to get sober this way or this way. This is where this all intertwines, you don't have to put, you know, something that you believe on the back burner. We don't say you can't come in, you can't have a spiritual life. I mean, you have to be completely spiritually bankrupt to be here. You know, bring it on in. This is where it all works together, and it's open to that. And there's just so much out there that I, you know, like everything, it just all threatened me. Now I can be open to it, and I can be receptive to it. And when I let that happen, you know, at the end, Sandy read, there's on 88, those are promises. We are then in much less danger of excitement, fear, anger, worry, self-pity, or foolish decisions. We become much more efficient. Yeah. So how do I want to spend my energy? And then the other promise, it works. It really does. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't have, it just works for you or me or, you know, because I always thought there was something very unique about me. It just says it works. It really does.
And it just frees you up. The self-awareness is huge. It frees you up. I would read that over and over again. How do you just give it up? And how do you give it over? What's that about? And this just right-sizes me. I'm aware of these things that make me tick. I'm aware of my defects. I'm aware of the good things, too, that I'm capable of. And I want all the goodies. I'm an alcoholic. I want more. I want the good stuff. And this program, this design for living, works for me. And I can have those opportunities to feel the good and you know, suit up and show up, and I get out of what you put in, and that's
lean on in and get the goodies. Yeah. Okay, is that good? All right, so that's 10 and 11. Thanks guys.